Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Crocher. One of the many ICT researchers meeting in Banff this week at the iCORE Summit is Dr. Michael Brett. Known for his many breakthroughs in the fabrication of nanomaterials, he's now working on a new type of solar cell. That's just one of the many success stories in Michael's career as a scientist and teacher. And just as the buildup of cholesterol can plug one's arteries, the same thing can happen with oil pipelines. One person trying to solve the problem of paraffin deposition is Dr. Peter Toma of the Alberta Research Council. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. One of Alberta's leaders in the field of nanotechnology is Dr. Michael Brett. Not only is he the Director of Engineering Physics at the University of Alberta, he holds a number of research chairs, and he's the recipient of several awards, including one from Aztec, and most recently, an award for excellence in teaching from APEGA, the Association of Professional Engineers, Geologists, and Geophysicists of Alberta. Much of Michael's research into the fabrication of nanomaterials is supported by iCORE, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence. This week, Michael is in Banff, along with scores of other researchers from across Alberta, for the first iCORE Summit.
It's a very exciting meeting where we're bringing together key researchers in information and communications technology together to share ideas and vision for the future of ICT in Alberta.
I understand that there's over 300 people actually at this summit. Where are they all coming from?
Most of the attendees at the conference, at the summit, are from Alberta. They're from research teams at the University of Alberta, the University of Lethbridge, and the University of Calgary. We have invited some researchers from overseas, from Germany, from the United States, and from outside Alberta, who have specialties of interest to us and with whom we can share information.
You're working in the field of nanotechnology. What are you hoping to get from this summit, this conference in Banff?
I'd like to get a broader perspective of where the future is evolving in areas such as cryptology and secure communications, broadband communications, intelligent software. These fields do not directly impact my work in nanotechnology, but they could well impact my work in the future, and I need to stay abreast of those topics.
One of the features of this conference is a number of retreats. Why have retreats? What are you going to get from that?
The purpose of a retreat is to bring a team of researchers together to discuss high-level topics of interest to the group and the members therein. For instance, you might discuss what research topics are essential and urgently need to be addressed. What are the exciting new problems that we should tackle? And there are more mundane issues like how best should we manage a laboratory? What critical pieces of equipment are needed in the near future, and how should we raise funds for those pieces of equipment?
What I'm trying to figure out is, how does nanotechnology fit in with the ICT field, with the type of work that iCORE is doing?
There are different layers in information and communications technology, and for many people, nanotechnology is a bottom layer of materials and devices. And through nanotechnology, we're able to make improved devices, faster devices that enable better communications or enable faster computers for intelligent processing. Nanotechnology has other forms as well, in that processes used to produce nano devices for communications can also be utilized to produce nano devices for lab on a chip, which is another form of nanotechnology. So there's a lot of interdisciplinary work in nanotechnology. Some of it is pointed towards ICT, but there are other obvious applications that we feel compelled to pursue because the need is so great in the other areas.
You've done a lot of work with nanofilms. Where are you going with that?
We have a number of applications of our porous thin film technology. One of them is in the optics area. Our structured materials interact very strongly with light in a powerful way that we can control. And we're looking at some photonic or optical devices of interest. Another area, which is very promising, is in the area of sensing. We're able to produce devices with very high surface areas. And high surface areas lead to structures amenable to sensing or catalysis, and we're looking at both of those fields right now. In other work, we are utilizing our structured materials in a new type of solar cell, which is not based on silicon, which is a standard solar cell you'd buy at a hardware store, but instead based on an organic dye immersed into a titanium oxide matrix.
Oh, how would that work?
Oh, boy. The organic dye absorbs light from the sky when it's incident on the device, and through an interaction with the titanium oxide is able to free an electron, which is collected as current, which provides the photovoltaic result that you're looking for.
What made you look at titanium oxide as opposed to something else?
Titanium oxide is known as a particular example of what's known as a wide bandgap semiconductor. And it suitably pairs with the organic dye that we're using in the solar cell structure. And being a semiconductor, it has a conductivity that allows us to collect the current that's generated by the absorption process.
How far along are you with that from working in the lab to having something on the market?
We're a long way from having something in the market. We have reached a point where after a series of improvements, we're at 5% photovoltaic efficiency, conversion efficiency for these devices, which is not high enough yet. If we have an advantage, it would be that they may be cheaper to mass produce than conventional silicon solar cells, but we still have to improve the efficiency of the devices.
Is this part of the work that you're doing with the I-Corps chair?
Indeed it is. One might not think of solar cells as information and communications technology, but as I mentioned earlier, sometimes you've developed a process or a material that's suitable for ICT. You see an opportunity in another field, and it's important enough that you can't leave it alone. So it's an ICT-developed materials technology applied to solar cells, under the banner of the I-Corps Research, who support this work.
Now, I-Corps isn't the only chair that you're holding. You hold a number of different chairs. What are those chairs, and how do you keep them straight?
I have a Canada Research Chair, which is a program that was started by the federal government to recognize key researchers in fields across Canada. And there are approximately 2,000 Canada Research Chairs in all fields, arts, humanities, science, engineering, across Canada. I hold the Microline NSERC I-Corps Industrial Research Chair, and this is a partnership between my industry sponsor Microline in Edmonton, who are a micro-device firm, with NSERC, which is the federal government organization in Ottawa, and I-Corps. And then I'm also an I-Corps professor, joint with Professor Mark Freeman in the Department of Physics in the I-Corps Nanoscale Engineering Physics Initiative, where we're working jointly on nanotechnology development.
How do you keep all that straight? Like, what's the purpose of having all these chairs?
Chair positions provide funding for research. And if I have one or two or three chair positions, I'm able to run a large and aggressive research program and try to tackle a number of opportunities for device development here in Alberta. And I do have a fairly large program. I have approximately 20 researchers working under these chair programs. Those researchers include undergraduate students, undergraduate engineers. They include postgraduate students, both MSc and PhD students. And the researchers include postdoctoral researchers. I have a postdoctoral chemist, a postdoctoral physicist, and a postdoctoral engineer, because it's a multidisciplinary field. So it's quite fun to form a team of highly qualified people and manage them to work in a direction to solve some of these exciting problems.
I had a chance to meet a couple of your students at the APEGA ceremonies where you were presented with an award for excellence in teaching. What does that mean to you?
It's a terrific honor from APEGA to receive this award, and I certainly hope I'm worthy of it. Sometimes I worry I'm not, but it's great to receive this recognition from APEGA.
Well, what's your philosophy for teaching? How do you go about it?
That's always the question people want to know, and it's difficult to answer. I think fundamentally I enjoy teaching, given enough time for it, of course, and I can get very enthusiastic about it, and I believe that enthusiasm is the most important tool at our disposal to convey the information to the student. If you're enthusiastic about the material, they can be enthusiastic about the material, or at least stay awake, which is always a challenge with the long hours of classes that they have to take.
What's next for you?
Oh, wow. I want to develop some devices and have them commercialized here in Alberta. We already have a variety of startup companies in Alberta that are a result of the nanotechnology developments at the University of Alberta, and I'd like to have some of my research contribute very directly to that.
Thank you very much, Michael.
You're welcome.
That was Dr. Michael Brett, award-winning nano researcher, iCore professor, and director of engineering physics at the University of Alberta. One of the problems that plagues oil companies is the deposition of wax or paraffin inside pipelines. It's not much different than the buildup of cholesterol that clogs human arteries. For the last few years, Dr. Peter Thoma and his colleagues in the Heavy Oil and Oil Sands Unit at the Alberta Research Council have been working on a way to deal with this paraffin buildup. This has been in collaboration with Malaysia's national petroleum company, Petronas. I asked Peter how Petronas and the Alberta Research Council first got together.
In this particular case, as probably in many other similar cases, was a good coincidence. Alberta Research Council was transferring a research unit, a large research unit, to University of Tulsa. And through a special agreement, we agree that that research unit be exploited by a group of companies in Tulsa, and we would be privy of the results. In the process, and I was together with colleague at Research Council, Zhong Nguyen, in the middle of this transferring process. Again, it was a transfer of hardware and also a transfer of intelligence from University of Tulsa to us. I met Petronas, who was a member of a multi-client joint venture in Tulsa. They approached me, knowing that Alberta Research Council and myself, representing ARC at that time, are knowledgeable in exploiting equipment, laboratory equipment, and designing laboratory equipment, and ask me and us if it's possible to redesign, to create, if possible, a better, more modern unit for obtaining more information on the mechanics of the deposition of paraffin and for being able to use this for practical application.
What is this deposition of paraffin? What sort of a problem does that pose for the oil company?
We know that oil is liquid, and in most of the situation is piped, is transported from the site, from the point where the oil is produced, that can be at the bottom of the ocean, to the platform, to the shore, or can be from a point situated somewhere in Alberta, say, to a point of collecting, processing, and separation. This process is named piping. If the oil, and in many situations that is a situation, I should say it's almost a common situation, not for a heavy oil, but for conventional oil, and in many situations for offshore oil, if the oil contains a high amount or high percentage of what we name paraffin component, which are relatively easy identifiable through gas chromatography today, then it is possible, and it happens, then due to the fact that the production temperature is much higher than the temperature in an ambient and in the pipeline, the paraffin start to come out from solution, from the liquid, and deposit on the pipe. That will restrict the area of flow to a point where our equipments, our pumps, are not capable to do it, and also with important repercussion to the production, because if we decrease the pressure at the wellhead, we expect that the production also will decrease, and that might happen, depending where and how the pipeline is situated vis-à-vis of the production point. Therefore, the deposition of paraffin is a problem, and solving that problem is today at the mercy of what we name pigging, which is cleaning the pipeline with some special devices circulating through the pipe and pushing the paraffin layer away, cleaning the paraffin layer, or through chemical remedy, which in many situations involves a relatively large amount of chemical compounds to be injected. And at the end of the year, that may be a significant cost. Effectiveness of particularly of chemicals, it's always a debatable problem. And in many situations, it's addressed to a variety of laboratory investigations.
Now, you've been working on something to improve how you get rid of the paraffin deposits. What is it that you've been doing here at the Alberta Research Council?
Again, we reconsider some of the, I should say, conventional methods of observing and mitigating the deposition using some field-simulated equipment and chemical analysis. And by doing a redesign of the principle of such a equipment, we've been able to observe directly some aspects of the deposition which were not previously well observed and not at all understood.
Can you give me an example?
An example is that paraffin was visualized always as being a solid layer, and was being a solid layer which can be obtained, let's say, through pigging and through analytical determination at the end of the day or at the end of the process of pigging. By creating a system where the layer can be observed, I should say, fresh or immediately before it is, I should say, frozen, we notice that it is a more complex structure, and we gave it a two-layer name, and that allow us to develop a new method for calculating the rate of the deposition and removal in a way in which was not done before.
What can you do with that then?
Again, any I should say technical good discovery will have important repercussion in the mitigation of that. There is no simple way to say I have a good discovery in any area of the life without having a practical implication. In this particular situation, and I don't want to get into the details of the problem for a variety of reasons, we can better address pigging, we can better address the use and spread of chemicals, we can reduce the amount of money which are normally spent in this process of paraffin mitigation considerably, and reduce the deposit and increase, if you want, the throughput or decrease the cost of transportation. Therefore, there are direct implications on that, and the fact that we possess a unique tool for measuring this effect also is easing the way in which we cooperate with different factors, with, I should say, oil companies, probably, to assess and compare different methods and improve them.
You've just published a paper on this and presented it at a conference in the United States. What were you saying in that paper?
In the paper, the message was a little bit more complicated to be worded in two simple words in such an interview. But basically, we gave people a numerical, a calculation tool to be able to calculate not only the effect of deposition, which is known, which, let's say, has a relatively good way of being numerically represented, but the effect of removal and aging of the paraffin. In a simple nutshell, we gave the effect of aging, which means changing the structure and composition of the paraffin layer with time, a connotation which relates it to a partial removal or selective removal of some C components. Therefore, I should say that probably using a model which is used in sedimentology and was published in 1936, I was not born at that time, and combining it with new methods of assessing the turbulence activity, we were able to develop a relatively simple calculation model which will allow you to better assess the pigging strategies and to improve the way in which you use different additives, chemical additives, for reducing the cost. And give you an example. For a 250,000 barrels a day in a pipeline in Africa in operation right now, The annual cost for additives only is $16 million a year. Well, this is probably negligible if you put $40 a barrel and you consider 250,000 barrels a day. But it is significant when you go and say we can reduce it 20% with a research information that probably will cost sponsors no more than $200,000-$300,000. Therefore, there are effects, economic effects, and that can spin off more research and more knowledge development in this area.
Now that you've made these new observations, you've got a calculation model, you've published the paper, what's next?
Well, first of all, something was missing in the presentation, whatever, and this is the fact that this research was possible, or I should put it in a negative connotation, would not be possible without a strong cooperation between Alberta Research Council and Petronas. As I mentioned at the beginning of the discussion, Petronas approached us, gave us a credit, and gave us money to design a new system. Yes, the system was a success, but at the end of the day, we are now operating together with Petronas two similar units, one in Petronas Research and one in Alberta Research Council, that makes the objective and the research and the final results to be immediately applied to some Petronas need or customized for other customers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Peter Toma, a distinguished senior scientist at the Alberta Research Council. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Research Council, the Science Alberta Foundation, University of Lethbridge, Alberta Ingenuity, Sustainable Forest Management Network, Ducks Unlimited Canada, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, and the Alberta Conservation Association. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.